Hi, Odyssey fans. I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine.
Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Today is our latest in a mini-series of podcasts looking back on Album 73, 28 Hours.
And it's a doozy because we're talking to writer-director Kathy Buchanan and, at least for a short time, sound designers Luc Guinot and Zack Schneider, which means that it's time for, yes, a massive spoiler warning.
Oh, yeah. You know, there are huge spoilers in this podcast. If you haven't heard all six parts of 28 Hours, from morning to final minutes, stop listening here and go listen there.
The shows are on the club, CD, and download, so you have plenty of different ways to listen.
You know, we had so many questions for these three that it took nearly 28 hours to unpack it all. So let's get started. Well, Kathy, Luc, and Zack,
hi.
Thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be
happy to be here.
We are pleased to be here.
All right.
So, Kathy, when we interviewed you for the As Buck Would Have It podcast, we talked about how that story was originally interwoven with a completely different narrative. Well, since 28 Hours is now released, we can kind of take the lid off this and reveal that this was the story that was outlined with the Buck one.
Yes.
What would those two stories have looked like together?
Well, it was going to be the same storyline with Buck and Jules trying to find Buck's dad. And then this was also going on in another part of town. And so the one thing that was really connecting the two stories was Eugene. And he was going to be helping defuse the bomb. And then he would have to go back and forth between, like, once he heard that Buck was in danger, he would have to choose between helping Buck or helping with the bomb. And so just to show, like, his commitment to Buck, because, of course, he would choose Buck in that situation. So that's how they were originally going to tie together. But because that was the only point that they were going to connect, we just decided to make them two separate storylines, which I'm glad, because it would have been
a very busy show.
Yeah, exactly. And as it is, 28 Hours is already a full six-parter,
right?
And couldn't really fit together with the Buck story, like you said. So what parts did you have to add to 28 Hours to sort of fill in that time that the Buck storyline was going to take?
Well, it was supposed to originally be three episodes, 28 Hours was, because it was going to be three and three. And so then it became four. And then Chris Deal, the sound designer, said in a meeting, just make it five. And then from there, I'm like, I might as well take the whole album and make it six. So it kind of just kept growing. I think I just, you know, there's more ideas that I got to flesh out. And it was just so fun to work on that it kind of kept growing and growing and growing. So the things that were added were basically everything in parts three and four were added completely.
One of your outlines included a plot with Olivia and Zoe.
Yes.
They don't appear in this album at all. I mean, what would their story have been about, and why was it cut?
We had wanted to introduce some kids into the show, since it is mostly adults in there. And so I had made the storyline with Olivia and Zoe working at the TV station, interning at the TV station with Sky. Mm-hmm. And so they were a part of the investigation in finding out who Dr. Rusk was. But the big difference was then Sky was going to kidnap them once they found out. And so that was a whole other element that we just decided there was already so much going on that we didn't need anything else in there. Now, if they gave me 12 parts, I would have added that.
Yeah. And perhaps the biggest revelation here is that the chairman returns. And before this, he was only heard in 2002's Novacom finale, Exit. So has there
20
been
years ago?
Yeah,
it's amazing to think that's still
alive.
Whenever I talk to fans, that's always the series that comes up. Everybody loves Novacom, so it's so cool. The chairman is kind of back. So had there been consideration of including him in a story before now, and then why did you decide to bring him back here?
We've talked about it before. We knew he was going to come back, but didn't know when. So when I first started this story arc, I didn't even know that it was going to be the chairman.
Mm.
But as, you know, I went through the outline and stuff like that, it really worked to have him back in this story arc. And I knew he needed to be reintroduced again. So I was hoping the team would go along with it. And they let me do it.
Well, he's involved in some pretty big operations, yeah, and this would qualify.
And this was a big operation, so it worked well that he was a part of it. And I enjoy hearing from the chairman, too, so I'm excited to see what happens next with him.
Okay, well, so he's coming back again?
Oh, he has to.
Okay.
You'll have to wait 20
more
years.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, you heard it first here.
Put it on your calendar.
Well, storytelling, Kathy, it always seems to be a combination of planning and making it up as you go. This album is a revealing part of Jillian's story. You created that character back in 2016.
Yes.
Where did she come from? How much of her story did you have figured out from the beginning?
I knew she was going to be a secret agent. I knew there was going to be some romantic tension between she and Jason, not knowing exactly where that would go. And I knew she was there to watch Jason undercover, and that she had this whole different persona of this ditzy airhead kind of person. That was her cover. And also that she had, you know, kind of all these things in her background, like when she was telling Connie about, you know, that she knew plumbing and that she knew how to work on a talk show, you know, because she had gone undercover and all these things before. So she did have this variety of experience.
So what about the making it up as you go part? Were there things about her character that you discovered along the way?
Her love for shoes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, the actress coming in and doing it really just sort of, she kind of formed the character herself too, like the way her humor worked and how the way she interacted with other people. So I feel like the actress herself became very integral.
And, yeah, Monica's great. Yes. In fact, she did. I thought the transition into this, you know, the real Jillian was very interesting. Did you, as you were directing her, have any particular notes that you gave her to kind of make that move from ditzy Jillian to Agent Jillian?
She actually, we had talked about, she knew from day one that she was an undercover agent. So when she first came in for, you know, the shows early on, she knew at that point. So I think she'd always played it knowing that there was more to Jillian than what we saw. So I think that made the transition a little more natural. She knew it was coming. And she was actually the second Jillian that we used. In the first Jillian show, it was a different actress that we kind of couldn't work with us after that. But I'm so glad we ended up with Monica because I felt like she really captured that, you know, the humor and the quirkiness that's so Jillian. Now, one of the things that when Jillian was first introduced and when the team was we were discussing the possibility of her, the concern was, what if the fans really like Jillian, like the fake Jillian, and so then they're going to be disappointed when it's the real Jillian who's not as entertaining and more normal, you know? And so I worked really hard to make the fake Jillian extremely obnoxious, like literally a pain. And
literally.
And because then I thought if she was really annoying, they won't be too upset when she's not. So
if they're still listening by the time you make
the
transition.
As a trend, they still like the annoying one too. That just says a lot about the actress, right? You mentioned that the story you added was kind of the middle episodes, but the beginning and ending of 28 Hours was kind of in place first. So what was the breakthrough that allowed you to sort of connect those two pieces and finish the story?
I started knowing that Jillian was going to be revealed as an agent. In fact, it was called the Jillian story arc for the Jillian reveal story arc for the longest time before it became 28 Hours. So I knew Jillian would be revealed for who she is. Jason would be kidnapped. So I kind of knew part one. And I knew randomly, I knew that I wanted there to be a bomb in a hospital when someone was having an operation as the end. Like I knew it, like that's, I had that picture in my mind of this very urgent, you know.
Yeah, very urgent.
Scenario. And so, but I, at that point, I thought the operation was going to be on Penny's sister's baby, like an in utero operation. So I was actually investigating or researching that and trying to figure out how we can pull that in. So we introduced Charlotte being pregnant in a Y surprise, thinking that it would eventually include her in this story arc. But then it just, because of everything that was going on with Jason, it just you know, it worked out that it was going to be him on the operating table instead.
Okay, I got to ask you about the whole Pole House subplot with Sky.
Yeah.
That kind of came out of left field for me. It was a little bit of a surprise.
Yes.
Because I don't know how much you've written for Pole House, but what made you go there?
It was doing a rewrite of an outline. So it was kind of down the line a little bit. Because when we took out Zoe and Olivia, somebody had to be, you know, figuring out the whole Sky stuff. And so I thought, I mean, what's a way that Pole House could get involved, but not in his usual, you know, investigating, questioning, wondering kind of way. And so I thought this would be a fun way for him to kind of be able to interact with Sky, you know, that wasn't typical of how Pole House.
Well, it's interesting timing because it's about the same time we're in the club. We're getting to see Pole House as a grandfather.
Right.
In a different role, too. Mm-hmm. So
there's so much more to Pole House than
apparently there is.
Here,
yeah.
You know, and I didn't realize at the time when I first started on that storyline that Sky was as young as she was. I had kind of always pictured her in her 40s or something. And so when Nathan told me that she was in her 20s, I was like, oh, well. And so then we kind of had to adjust a few lines in there to, you know, make it palatable.
So with action adventure stories like this, it's often challenging to find, you know, just the right theme. So did this one always have the themes of self-sacrifice and trust, or maybe were there some other themes that you explored before you got to the final product?
Well, when it was first connected with the As Buck Would Have It storyline, the theme that I intended was, you know, to have put the family first and the priority of a family in your life. And so obviously when the arcs got separated, there had to be a new theme. And I think it was until second outline, maybe even into script stage, that Marshall Younger was like, okay, we have to, you know, what is this going to be? And it was his idea that it would be about trust because he had seen glimmers of that. I'm a firm believer that the theme emerges from a good story. So I never start with a theme. I kind of just see where it comes out. So he saw like, oh, in part one, this seems to be coming out. And then part five, this seems to be coming out. And so I basically went back and just sort of accentuated those areas to make the theme a little bit clearer.
Okay, let's move on to recording. Zach and Luke, welcome back in.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, hey.
Long time no see.
Actually, this is for all three of you, though. These episodes were recorded. So, Kathy, we're not going to just
kick me to the curb.
We're not going to kick you to the curb just yet. But these episodes were recorded over 4 days. For all of you, what was the most challenging part of recording 28 hours?
Recording a six-parter out of order because of stuff like actor availability or like COVID safety protocol stuff definitely makes things exciting. Sometimes individual scenes had to even be like broken up and recorded on separate days, which was kind of crazy. I think Kathy did a great job of reminding the cast where we were in the timeline and keeping the continuity going, though.
And definitely just like the size of the cast too, because there were a lot of actors that came in and they would come in for a morning and then the next afternoon and stuff like that. Right. So having that almost revolving door definitely needed like a strong direction to keep everybody on the same page as far as whereas we were in the story and what needed to happen.
And like Luke said, they with the COVID restrictions, we could only have so many people in the studio. And so then we had people coming in from other studios or calling in from home. And so it was a lot of pieces to fit together.
Yeah. I know in the past we said that recording family style with everybody in the room together is really good for energy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this required a great deal of energy, and yet we had to do it with people isolated from each other. Was that a challenge?
It was, but I feel like the people that we needed to have in the studio, Jillian and Jason were in the studio, Katie was in the studio, Whit was in his home studio at home, but, you know, we could hear him in the studio, and he had great energy. I mean, he was, that didn't deter him at all. And so it definitely... A lot of people did come into the studio. They just had to come in bits and pieces, you know, in a few at a time. So kudos to the cast. They did such a great job of keeping it going and keeping the energy up. And especially because this was the first recording session since after Will Ryan had passed. Mm-hmm. And so there was definitely this feel. I know Townsend Coleman, who plays Jason, one in particular, that it was heavy coming in because it was, okay, this is where I should see Will, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was another challenge in the process too. Mm-hmm.
Luke and Zach, both of you are credited on all six episodes in this album. So how exactly did you divide up the job of production of all this?
They flipped a coin.
Well, yeah, we looked at it and we're like, which one do you want? No, since it was six parts, we always start with the voice edit, right? We get all the actors' tracks and edit those. So we both took separate parts, and I think we started with, you did one, I did two, and then I think somebody did three. I don't remember how it all panned out, but we both took three of the episodes and then did the voice edit for those three. And then from there, we almost split off and started doing separate things. So I did a lot of, I did the sound effects, cutting in all of the hard effects, we called them, things that we didn't record that we just had on hand from our library. And Luke started working on music. And then Luke ended up doing, you want to tell them, you did the whole mix. So
Yeah. But before that, we worked on Foley together.
That's true. Yeah. We come back together to work on
Foley together. We worked on music notes together. But yeah, I did the final mix stuff after Zach laid in all his brilliant hard effects. It was really fun to collaborate together. And these are some great episodes.
What's your favorite part of sound design? I mean, you get the voice edit, adding sound effects, Foley, mixing. And when you kind of divided it up, did you do it based on your personal strengths? Did you do it, rock, paper, scissors? How did you go about doing that?
Well, I want to say yes and no. We kind of picked the things that we wanted to do and the things that we liked doing. So I did like doing all the sound effects and stuff. So I definitely kind of chose that part of it. And then, you know, we were both like, you know, this is going to be a long session of Foley. Might as well do it together.
Well, and typically Foley, I know Rudy sometimes will come in and help you guys with Foley too.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of hands, doesn't it, sometimes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you give us an example of some sounds that were not a one-man job?
Ooh.
Sorry, I went off script.
What did we even do?
I have a question though, because I appreciate the enthusiasm and skill that you came, you know, into the show with. But because when I was writing it, there were points where I'm like, the sound designers are going to hate me, and I think I even noted it in the outline. Like when the hospital was being evacuated, and I'm like, there's wheelchairs and there's alarms and there's like intercom and there's doctors and I'm like, and you know, and the sound designers are going to hate me, you know? And so, because it's very easy for me to write out what's happening and a whole different thing to actually make it come to life. So for that scene in particular, how did you do that?
And did you hate her?
And did you hate me?
No. Actually, for me, that was one of the most memorable parts of the show. Mm-hmm. And specifically, we got to do a crowd recording, brought some folks in, and they did a great job of all being confused and scared. And it was actually really fun having them in the studio, and we just directed
just
them.
Just people from at Focus?
Around Focus, We just brought people in, volunteers, and told them, we're like, we're evacuating a hospital, and we need you to be worried. Like, really worried.
Do that again, but with a limp.
Yeah.
You know? Do that mid-heart attack.
Yeah. But, yeah, that part was actually really memorable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a great job with it.
I mean, it did take a really long time to sound design, so.
More than it took me to write the description. Right,
Phew, there's a lot going on, so much so that we couldn't fit it into one podcast. We'll hear from Kathy, Luke, and Zach on our next edition, too. But the 28-hour story arc isn't all that's going on in Odyssey right now.
No way. In fact, we've got a new episode premiering in the club tomorrow, December 1st. Let's hear what that sounds like.
This month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club, Wilson tells stories about people of all ages.
Welcome, everyone, to another Knox On podcast.
An old man?
Either God is our God or he isn't.
A young girl?
Daddy!
Can I go, please?
And a familiar older man who was once a child.
Yes, I remember it well.
Come on, Whit! You're such a slowpoke! Keep up!
Jack, watch it! Look out!
Woo!
This month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
That's tomorrow in the club.
We've answered plenty of questions over the last few podcasts, and there will be even more answers on our next one, but there are bound to be even more that we haven't answered.
If you still have questions for the team, call our toll-free comment line at 1-855-784-WHIT. Always make sure you have a parent's permission before you call.
And that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
Visit us online at adventuresinodyssey.com or call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
It's time to level up. Give your kids a safe, faith-focused, and biblically-based community, and so much more. Join the Adventures in Odyssey Club. Club members get on-demand access to the exciting Adventures in Odyssey series, including more than 900 episodes. With faith-building activities, parental controls, and a safe online community, the Adventures in Odyssey Club could be your best adventure yet. Learn more and start your free trial at adventuresinodyssey.com/radio.